Then I think that if we spend our lives expecting something else, then we don't have the opportunity to really experience the good that is happening to us right at that moment.
Welcome to the Inspired to Thrive podcast. I'm your host, Phoebe Lay, and in each episode, I will be sharing with you insights from either an inspiring person or myself to help you thrive and shine online and in person. We talk about all things marketing, relationships, money, business, growth, mindset, and more. So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Inspire to Thrive and Shine podcast. I'm very, very excited today to have an amazing speaker, Gina, who is going to be jumping on this podcast with us. And what we are here to discuss today is an incredible lineup of different topics. Gina helps people who struggle to communicate their message to get their message across, not only on the screen, on page, but also on stage. And she's a TEDx speaker, a coach, an author, and communications expert with more than 20 years of experience across APAC, Europe, and Africa. Her track record in working with global tech organizations, engineering firms, marketing agencies, as well as in the field of education, has helped numerous clients create, communicate, and amplify their messages on the screen, on stage, and of course, on the page. And not only that, Gina's insights combine the wisdom of experience with a deep knowledge of the theory and practice of communication. She regularly lectures on the subjects of storytelling and authenticity, and she provides inspirational speeches to global organizations and speaks on podcasts about leadership, communication, and marketing. Gina, welcome to the podcast. It's so great to have you here today.
Phoebe, I'm so excited for our conversation. We're going to bring out some really inspiring stuff. And I hope that everyone who's listening in will feel just a little bit of sunshine in their life today.
Absolutely. And I hope that this podcast also brings a lot of insights and gives people the opportunity to keep shining brighter.
Here we go.
Gina, I mean, having spoken to you a couple of times off LinkedIn and having, you know, really connected with you virtually at least, I really feel that you have a lot of expertise and experience in working with people who not only potentially feel dissatisfied in their workplace, but at times, I would say probably suffering and are experiencing, you know, a gap between what they want, their ideal life or work scenario, and, you know, and what they're currently experiencing. Would you say that that is the case?
Absolutely. I think the human condition is such that we spend too much time focusing on what we don't have and too much time focusing on what isn't happening to us right now. I'm not a Buddhist, but there is a Buddhist philosophy of living in the moment, of being present, of observing the things that we can see, touch, hear, smell, and even taste, and really taking the time to experience that brings us back to what's happening now. A friend of mine once said they tried to eat a raisin for 5 minutes, and it gave them the most incredible appreciation of what it meant to actually explore the sense of taste fully. And I think that if we spend our lives expecting something else, then we don't have the opportunity to really experience the good that is happening to us right at that moment.
That is so true, Gina. I can totally relate to that firsthand in things that, you know, I've experienced in the past and even am currently going through. I think it's so easy for us to focus on where we want to be or how things could be and creating a perfect image of our lives and our situation when really we should just be grateful. I mean, I don't like using the word should, but I think we could be a lot more grateful for what we are experiencing. And yeah, I definitely agree with what you're saying. So Gina, I want to dive into it and I jump right into, you know, the topic of people being dissatisfied and particularly when it comes to business and the workplace and our careers. I mean, we spend so many hours of our week at work or working. And
One of the things that I often hear is that people aren't really satisfied in what they're doing. What do you think are the most common reasons why that is?
They say that people don't leave businesses, they leave bosses. And there has been, in my experience over the many years I've spent in corporate life, a disconnect between a lot of organizations where there's a difference between managers and leaders. Managers have to manage tasks. They make sure that people deliver. It's all about efficiency. But leaders inspire people. And I have been fortunate to work for some incredible leaders. And what they do is they make the workplace just a little bit better. And I think they give you a sense of optimism, a sense of positivity, and also a sense of the art of the possible. And to me, that is the essence of leadership, knowing that you're going somewhere, but you're not going there alone, knowing that no matter how frustrating things might be at that moment, there is a reason that you're doing something bigger. I like to think of my big hairy ass goal as eliminating human suffering at work. And it's a tricky one because I think there are a lot of people who are suffering and don't realize it. But leaders have the ability and the responsibility to make sure that their people don't just feel like a job is a job. They actually feel like they're coming to work to do something and to make a difference somehow.
Yeah, I love that. I think that when people feel like they're making a difference and they're doing something that's good for the greater good, there's definitely a lot more satisfaction than just like doing a job just because it pays the bills or, you know, doing work for the sake of it. In your experience with, you know, the way people perceive their role, and especially if the perception of their role is different from their reality, how do you think that impacts the way they show up or their job satisfaction or, you know, even their success in business?
You know, that's a fabulous question about perception and reality. It's been a lesson that's been driven to home to me recently in a deeply uncomfortable way. Had an interaction with someone where I sent some messages that I thought were beautiful and positive, and they were really hurt by the stuff I'd said. And it was a challenge because my perception of what I'd said was not their reality. Their perception of what I'd said was their reality. And it just goes to show that it doesn't matter what is actually happening. What matters is the way that we interpret that. So that applies in both our personal lives and in our professional lives. There is an ability to choose our circumstances. And if you've read anything by Viktor Frankl, you'll know that even in the most incredibly difficult of circumstances, even in the Holocaust, he was able to find positivity and a sense of good, even in the most extraordinary, difficult times. And it may seem naive to think that we can simply change our attitude and change our life by changing the way we see things. But there is, in fact, a scientific basis for it. I was listening to a great episode on Diary of a CEO today by a woman by the name of Dr. Swart, or Dr. Swart, depending on how you pronounce it. And she was talking about stress and the perception of stress. Did you know that people can actually change their relationship, their physiological relationship to stress, depending on how they perceive it? Now, she said that there was such a thing as bad stress and good stress. She doesn't think this is a good way of describing it, but there is a term called eustress, E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S. And that is kind of the optimal stressful situation. And what I find fascinating with eustress is that some of it is perception. If you think you are too stressed and you can find a way of recalibrating your mind about what this thing is that is giving you stress, you can actually reduce your physiological response to that stress. And by the same token, I think a lot of us live in circumstances where we have a certain level of stress, but some things become disproportionately stressful. I think there's a big challenge of mind over matter. You know, how big is this in the grand scheme of things? I once had a fabulous boss who said to me, Gina, if this doesn't happen, is it going to be the end of the world? Is someone going to die? And the answer was, no, absolutely not. And it helped me recalibrate if I was worried about missing a deadline or if I hadn't got a promotion or even if I was concerned about a relationship I had with a colleague. at the end of the day, will anyone die? Fortunately, I don't live in the medical environment where making a mistake means someone does die. But yes, I think there's a really important role of reimagining stress so that our perception of it, in fact, does change our reality.
I completely agree. I think perception not only changes our reality, but like you say, it changes our physiology. Mm-hmm. It changes how we show up. It changes our thoughts for the rest of the day, our mood. It affects our health. It affects so many things, our appetite. The list goes on. And I think that you've just shared some great examples of how our mindset can make a big difference in what we experience. And I'd love to also ask, can you share some examples of how, you know, small changes in perception or even in our communication and potentially our leadership can have an impact what kind of significance does it have in the workplace or in our businesses?
There is a beautiful trend happening at the moment where people are talking about the role and impact of empathy in organizations. Now, I don't know that everyone can be empathetic about every situation. If you are a man and a woman is going through a difficult fertility time, you're never going to be able to be empathetic. You know, that's just the way it is. But I do think that there is a very important role for leaders to be able to put themselves in someone else's shoes. Over the years, I've studied many different management styles. And one of the most important features of current life is that we can't think that every employee is put together in a homogenous group. Now, people are individuals, and we can head down a path that makes too much of this. I think there's a risk. But I think that when we look at employees as humans, as people with hopes and dreams and aspirations, well, there should be room and flexibility in our working lives to be able to challenge people and give them the right level of stress so that they're not bored by their tasks, but they're not also overwhelmed by their tasks. I've heard this referred to as Goldilocks tasks. So not too hot, not too cold. What happens when we're focused on Goldilocks tasks is we bring the best of ourselves to that. I remember employing a charismatic and interesting employee many years ago who had been overlooked by the organization for a long time. And I gave her a little bit of leeway and a little bit of help. And then I challenged her to challenge herself and gave her a task, said, right, when do you expect to have that done? Now, the irony is that the deadline she gave me was much shorter than the deadline I would have given her. And this was a huge surprise to me. It turns out that actually she needed a shorter deadline in order to create that positive stress or eustress so that she could actually achieve the goal in a sense that gave her this fulfillment of almost a little bit of panic to be able to achieve the goal at her optimal level. And that was a huge surprise to me because I kind of figured, you know, you give someone longer to do something and you'll get better work out of them. Not in her case. And it turns out not in mine either. I don't do anything without a deadline.
I'm the same. I think that that definitely applies to me, especially when it comes to things that, you know, don't have an immediate effect. Mm-hmm. And I think that, yeah, deadlines can be good as long as they are realistic. And
I want to go back to that question because you were talking about communication tips specifically and how leaders can change their habits or their behavior around communication. The way that we communicate with people is often a reflection of our own perception of life. Now, often people think they can hide their emotions. They can fake or mask how they're feeling. And the unfortunate thing is that if you're in a situation where you are in a leadership position and you are angry or disappointed or resentful or any of those negative words, you may think you can hide that, but you can't. As humans, we are incredibly able to pick up on nuances. The challenge is how we can react to those nuances. And often what happens in communication is people think they're giving one message, but they're not aligning. They're not authentic all the way through. So for example, a CEO has just discovered that the numbers are not looking good for this quarter. he or she stands up in front of their audience, perhaps at a quarterly meeting, and is really hurting inside, but is trying to put on a brave face. Well, somehow, as humans, we sense a disconnect. We know that something that they're saying is not true. Now, it's a tricky situation because you can't motivate your employees by lying to them. But it is possible to give them a little bit of information, even if you can't tell them the whole picture. And quite frankly, the grapevine works in a way that your employees will find out that information sooner or later anyway. So the challenge is, how much authenticity can one bring to work and to communication? I think that some people overshare, and that can be a risk. I know I do it. I do it on a one-to-one basis because I want to build a relationship with someone. When you're in a position where you can't share information, for example, financial information that's still confidential, you're in a really difficult situation because you know that you need to motivate your employees, but you have to put a good face on it. So how do you do that? Well, the answer lies in being as honest as you can and as humble as you can. And to tap into something that does make you feel a certain way when you're communicating. So one of the things that is recommended actually as a brain activity is to do exercise before you give a presentation or a speech. Now, I wouldn't recommend doing it immediately before you go on stage because you might be a little bit sweaty and uncomfortable, but there is nothing wrong with doing 10 star jumps to get your adrenaline pumping and get your brain working actively. And that can also change your mood as well. There's a direct correlation between what goes on in your brain, what goes on in your physiology. And so part of me knows from personal experience that actually doing more exercise is good for people at all levels of an organization, and even more so for those who are sitting at the top of an organization and just don't feel like they have the time to do it. So effectively, if you're communicating well to your audience, make sure you give as much of yourself as you possibly can, but also try to think about what would make you feel better or inspired as you deliver that message. And then try and be as authentic about that as possible.
I love that tip. I've never actually thought about doing exercise before delivering, you know, a talk or having a difficult conversation with someone. And I can imagine that, you know, you're flooded with endorphins, you know, maybe even a dopamine hit. And I think that could definitely reduce a lot of the stress levels. And I totally agree with what you're saying about oversharing. I think that leaders, CEOs, business owners don't need to overshare, especially with their employees and their team. Like, I've worked in teams where the business owner has significantly overshared and experience what it's like to be like uncomfortable but not really know what to say, because it's like, okay, well, I can really sense that you're feeling some big emotions, and I don't think it's conducive to a healthy workplace environment, because I truly believe that we thrive in positive environments, and it doesn't always have to be positive from start to finish, you know, every single day of the week. But I think that sometimes the difficulty as a leader is that we do need to work through our stuff, you know, before we set the scene. I think that we have a huge responsibility to do that.
It's lonely at the top. There is a reason that C-level execs and business owners need to hang out with other business owners. Because unfortunately, as much as you can share information with people who report into you, there isn't a power difference between different levels. And unfortunately, those who report into you, they shouldn't have to take on the responsibilities that you do as a leader. But it means that it's lonely, right? How do you manage those things? There are some fantastic groups where you can be brutally honest, but amongst peers. And I think if there's anything that we've learned since COVID, it is the ability to have virtual relationships with people who have a lot in common with us. I often encourage people to connect with me on LinkedIn and to have those online conversations. And I've built relationships with people who are in different countries, even on different continents, virtually, because we share something in common. And if you are a leader who's feeling alone, do yourself a favor and try and find a peer, someone you can talk to honestly, because there is safety in numbers, but sometimes you just don't have the numbers. And you can't expect your employees to shoulder that responsibility and that burden, but you have to get it off your chest somehow.
I agree. I totally agree. And I think that sometimes, you know, having peers is great, but also having someone that's completely neutral, that doesn't have anything to do with our business, really helps. You know, sometimes it could be professional or a therapist or a counselor or someone that works through, like, yeah, the different tiers of the organization that has an outside view as well. I think that's that's definitely, you know, a really positive, you know, type of person to have in a company.
As a communications coach, I observe how people's emotions reflect in the way that they speak. And a lot of the process of improving how we speak to others comes from understanding how they perceive us and also what's coming up in the way we talk that we never thought about, never knew, or that we actually are doing for a reason that has nothing to do with the current situation. That is a fascinating observation. And that's why part of the communication coaching I do is not just about, hey, let's sound like this. Let's use these tactics. Let's use this vocal range, or let's use this speed or pace. No, it's actually about saying, what's happening here? When you say this, you sound strange, different, stressed. What's happening in your head? And more often than not, the answer is, I'm thinking about this thing that happened in the past or this thing that I'm worried about. And we talked initially about being in the present moment. If you're not in the present moment, the risk is that you sound like you're somewhere else. So one tip I can share with people is this: make sure that you are in the moment when you're communicating with someone, because that allows you to be fully present. And that allows you to listen and engage more effectively. And quite frankly, communication is a two-way street. You will produce more effective communication output if you are focusing on getting the right level of communication input.
I absolutely agree. I hands down would, I think that you've hit the nail on the head. And I think this applies in everything, in our friendships, in our relationships, in the workplace, in the office, in our families as well. And I think that what you've just shared, we can all apply having a bit more of that being present in the moment type state of mind when we're communicating to better communicate with others. And I think that especially when we're in very close relationships with people, we often, like, you know, we will communicate with certain people on a daily basis, and how we communicate also affects how that other person feels. So, yeah.
One very important tip for dealing with communication with the people we deal with all the time is to be able to ask questions. The risk is that we create patterns, and this could be patterns in our personal lives or patterns in our professional lives. And what happens is that we talk to a certain way, and I don't know if you've ever had an argument with a partner or a close friend, and you start arguing about something, and then you're actually both, you're saying the same thing, but in different ways, and you end up in an argument. Why? Because you're going through the same pattern. You haven't stopped to actually go, wait, hang on a second. What I heard was X. Is that what you meant? More often than using slightly different words, or that was not in fact what they meant at all, but we heard that so strongly. There are a lot of communication models. One of my favorite one is the Wilbur Schramm model of communication. Bear with me a second. This is theory, right? And in this model of communication, you have a sender and a receiver, and you've got the message going across the middle. But the problem is that across any of these points, you can get noise. Now, the reason that this is so interesting is not because we all understand this. It's because the noise can be inside the sender's head, it can be inside the receiver's head, or it can be across the medium that we're using. So, for example, if our internet connection is not stable, we could have miscommunication. What fascinates me is for interpersonal communication, just perceiving something in someone's response can actually mess up that transmission of that communication. So if I say something to you and you're distracted, you might go, huh, yeah, whatever. And I perceive that you are dismissing me. Well, that's not your intention at all. So often the disrupt and the interrupt of a communication can be the difference between that message being effectively received or not. And sometimes that means looking at our intuition and going, there's something wrong here. I identify that you are not receiving the message in the way that I would expect you to. So for example, let's say you're giving an employee a bonus and the look on their face is not joy and delight. The look on their face is shock and horror. You know, this is a really good time to interrupt that communication and go, whoa, hang on a second. What's going on? Because I thought you'd be really happy with this bonus, but you're not. Tell me what's happening. And that stopping and asking questions becomes a form of interrupting a destructive pattern, but it also becomes a way to reset the conversation and to start again from the beginning in a far more effective way.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing. And I think that leads me to my next question, which is what happens when you're talking to a friend and you know, you're both on the same page, but then all of a sudden in the conversation, you say something, and because you've talked about this topic for so long and you have slightly different opposing views, your friend has assumed or heard you say something else. And then there's now a disconnect and they've now started to say something and you're already hearing that that person has misinterpreted what you've said. What do you do?
That's a tricky question. And it depends on the nature of the friendship. I talk about pattern interrupt. And one of those things is if you're doing the same thing that you've always done, which you know is going to lead to an outcome, stop and do exactly the opposite. So for example, if you're aware that your friend is responding badly and you would normally be like, whoa, what's happening? Are you okay? And then you know that that is going to aggravate the situation. Do exactly the opposite. Just stop. Stop talking. Experiment with it. See how shifting your normal pattern will shift their response. One of the other things I've observed in people who are in tricky relationships where they tend to be antagonistic toward each other is to do a little bit of visualization. So if I'm in an environment where I know that the person I'm talking to is just pushing all the bad stuff back at me instead of being open to a conversation, and I don't want that bad stuff back on me, I can imagine a mirror between me and them, which means that I can share the communication with them, but I'm going to bounce off that negativity that they share back towards me. And it means that it doesn't hurt me, it doesn't harm me the same way. In your example of a friend who you think has heard something that you didn't say, I think the best thing is to stop and to ask them and go, I'm observing something here. So for example, I see that it doesn't look like you're happy with what I've just said. Can I ask you, what did I say that upset you? Or to stop it and go, I think that you look upset. Are you upset? Because sometimes the emotions that we label other people with are not in fact the emotions that they're having at that moment in time. And by misconstruing the nature of the emotions, we misconstrue the nature of their communication back to us. If we know that they are upset and they respond in a way that is upset, that's fine. But if we suspect that they're upset and in fact they are angry or disappointed or hurt or just frustrated, what we get back from them will sound different to us. And again, perception is reality. Their perception of what we said is their reality. My perception of what I said is my reality. Somehow we have to be able to renegotiate that reality so that we can move forward.
Yeah, I love that. That's such a beautiful, beautiful example. And I can so see how that would work really well when the communication is normally very good in a friendship or in a relationship. You know, I think that they are really, you know, very healthy ways of like pattern interrupt, as you said. I want to talk about a little bit about like the mindset. Like I just want to shift gears a little bit and talk a little bit about the mindset of people, particularly when they are applying for roles in the way they show up in their business, you know, in particular. We had a conversation about imposter syndrome, and You know, we had a very, very interesting discussion about how, especially among successful women, sometimes our perception or our, you know, our critique of ourselves, our imposter syndrome, as some people will call it, will hold a lot of women back from pursuing certain opportunities or even showing up in a certain way. For example, maybe they could be fit to be paid and speak on stage, or to be an author, or, you know, to get paid a lot more than they do, or charge a lot more, but they don't, simply because of their mindset. What are your observations around that, Gina?
Personally, I've suffered from imposter syndrome myself. And it's been a long and interesting exploration, because sometimes the noise in my head is very loud. I call this person an inner shouty voice. So if they were a friend of mine, I wouldn't be friends with them, because they're harsh and horrible and they have some really bad things to say. It's interesting to observe that our inner shouty voice can get louder or softer, depending on our circumstances. I know that when I'm feeling positive and I'm seeing personal or professional success, that inner shouty voice almost disappears to nothing. And when I'm feeling miserable, that voice gets progressively louder and louder until it's almost all that I can hear. Now, women, and it's not just women, by the way, who suffer from imposter syndrome. It is actually 80% of the population. Now, that's wow. A big thing. It just shows up differently in women and in men. We, many of us, have a loud inner shouty voice, and it may come from previous experience. It may come from pure self-doubt. The answer to being able to address that is to partly challenge the voice in your head and to actually treat them as if they were a separate individual. And to literally tell that voice, sit down and shut up, because you don't know what you're talking about. One of the other ways of addressing imposter syndrome is literally to do the thing that you are most afraid of.
Oh, I love that one.
I found a really interesting quote the other day. I forget who it was. The quote said, "We need to do the things that we are afraid of, because they will come up at some point in time. We're going to have to address this sooner or later. So if we can shift the perspective to do the thing now, rather than later, we learn to exercise that courage muscle." And I love this quote: courage, like a muscle, is strengthened by use. If you think about it, the biggest, bravest, most successful people in the world are not big and brave because they've never done anything. They're big and brave because they have tried again and again and again. And sometimes they've failed and sometimes they've succeeded. But that's not necessarily imposter syndrome either. Imposter syndrome is about being really good at what you're doing and still feeling like a failure. And that's the difference. What happens if you achieve extraordinary things and then you go, no, well, it doesn't matter? I would actually point people towards a very raw and vulnerable presentation I did not too long ago. That's up on my YouTube channel. So just look for Gina Ballarin Verbalistics and you'll find it. And it's called I'm Nobody. And through it, I go through the factors that made me feel like I am nobody throughout my lifetime. Now, we wouldn't be having this conversation if I literally was nobody, but it doesn't mean that I didn't feel like I was nobody. And for me, the thing that really shifted it was to choose a word of the year that I'm trying to live up to, which is incandescent. And being incandescent, shining so brightly that we burn things, I think is a way of reminding myself that I have the opportunity and the possibility to affect change in the world that I may not think I do, or that I may not have given myself credit for in the past, or that I may not have let myself do in the past. And my answer was twofold. One, tell the little person in my head to sit down and shut up. And two, to give myself permission. And sometimes that means giving yourself permission to be extraordinary, giving yourself permission to be the person who you think the world might not want you to be. I always come back to Maryam Williamson, who wrote this wonderful passage It is our light, not our darkness, that most terrifies us. Who am I to be brave, beautiful, talented? Actually, who are you not to be? And I could go through the whole thing, but effectively the message is, as we let our own light shine, we automatically give other people permission to do the same. And as we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So there's nothing wonderful about hiding. I think the world would be a far better place if we actually stood up for what we believe in and took that brave risk and exercised those courage muscles.
Oh, you are speaking to my soul, Gina. I love your word of the year, incandescent. That is beautiful. And that's the whole reason why this podcast is called Inspired to Thrive and Shine, because we need to be inspired to rise up, to show up, to stop hiding, because our inner voices are so critical at times. They can be so loud. They can be so diminishing and mean and cruel. And, you know, I think a lot of people, I mean, you say 80% of the population, you know, probably speaks down on themselves. I mean, it's no wonder there are men and women that aren't in thriving roles or doing things that they know they could be doing and stepping into their power and their strength. And I think that more people need to step up, take courage, and, you know, and daily put aside that voice. And for me, I mean, like, I'm going to go back into social media for a moment and talk about, like, showing up on social media. Like, I have been doing social media for years, almost a decade. And even before I did social media as a business owner, I was on social media. I've been, you know, like, actively using Instagram for, like, over 10 years. And I have seen myself go through phases where some days it's harder than others to show up. Some days you feel like there's nothing to share and you just want to hide in a shell. And for me personally, I think doing things that remind me of my strength and my power really help. You know, it's not just in the way you look. It's not the way you feel. You know, but, well, it is the way you feel, but how I change the way I feel is by reminding myself of my own strength and power through doing things that pretty much put me in a state where I'm like, oh, wow, you know, I've got this. It could be something as simple as having this podcast interview. It could be something as simple as a meeting that, you know, that really just like brings the shine back into my day. It could be a conversation, a phone call, but sometimes if we're in our head, it's so easy for that imposter syndrome to kick in. And that's where it's important to, like you say, pattern interrupt. And some of our pattern interrupts have to do with hearing ourselves in our strength, in our power, and, you know, and just having the willpower to beat that inner voice. And if you don't like the sound of your own voice, or if you don't like how you look or, you know, how you show up, change your physiology. Do something that changes your physiology. Get up, dance, run, go to the gym. Do whatever it takes to put yourself back into that good state where you are mentally strong, because that's how we show up and that's how we thrive.
There are a couple of points here I'd like to add. If you are a fan of lists, one of the best things you can do to tell the person in your inner head to sit down and shut up is to make a list of every time you have a success. Mm. I've heard it called a memory jar or a jar of beautiful things. And it doesn't have to be something that you define as a success. It could also be something that other people define as a success. I spoke with an ex-colleague the other day who, to my mind, possessed both warmth and strength. And that is the definition of being a compelling person. And you could tell that in his life right now, he did not feel compelling. But I told him that I saw him as compelling. And I said to him, write that down, stick it on a piece of paper, put a jar on your desk and put maybe a post-it note, colored post-it notes. And every time someone gives you a compliment, pop that compliment into the jar. And then when you're feeling crappy, go back to that compliment jar and pull something out. And remember that perception, your current perception, might be your reality now, but it is not your reality forever. And it is not other people's realities of you. So take that tip away if you're struggling with your own confidence and get that input from others.
I love that. I really, really love that, Gina. Thank you. I'm going to start my jar today. And I actually, that brings me back to a time where I was doing a speaker's training course like many years ago. And I remember it was my first time presenting like a, I think it was like a 3 minute or a 6 minute speech. And I had all these, so one of the exercises was at the end of the day, we would write a note to every single person after they've spoken and then like put it in this little, kind of like, in, you know, during Christmas, how you have like little stockings. So we would put it in their little box. And at the end of that retreat or at the end of that training, I went home and I had all these sticky notes and I put them on my wall for like over a year. And I would sometimes just read it and just be encouraged. You know, it'd be someone saying, Phoebe, you have an amazing story to share, or you present so well. And some days that little bit of encouragement really went a long way. So I think we could actually use that in the workplace. I think anyone that's listening, if you have a team and, you know, even if you have a small team of three or five, you could do that. You could get, you know, your team to write a positive note to each other about attributes that they see in each other. And I think that will really help foster that positivity and that inspiration to get us to, you know, it just helps us get through the week, through the day, and it really makes a big difference.
I did actually do something very similar a few years ago. I don't know if you've ever come across the compliment slip. Now, it was used in businesses when a lot of stuff was printed and posted, and people would send a, probably usually a form, short thing that had your company logo and your contact details, and you'd have a little space to write on it, and you would send it with your compliments. As in, here's the quote, I'm sending to you this with my compliments. And it becomes a compliment slip. Now, its compliment is spelled differently to a compliment you would give someone in real life. But we were about to get rid of a whole bunch of old stationery. And I had this on my desk and I thought, I'm in half an hour earlier before my colleagues. What if I wrote every single person a compliment on a compliment slip and literally left it on their desks? And the smiles on people's faces. But this being the UK, was a little bit conflicted because sometimes they kind of go, what? Why are you telling me this? I don't understand. What do you want from me? If you have an organization where you have a lot of psychological safety and someone randomly gives you compliment slips, or indeed you build it into part of your business as usual, it can be an incredibly motivating activity. And I would challenge anyone here listening to this, if times are tough, for you, for your team, for your leader, that is when you need to remind them about the good that they bring to the world in particular. It will be hard for them to hear, but that's exactly when they need to hear it. If I may, there's another tip I'd like to share. When I'm doing communication coaching, I often ask people to identify the things that make them happy. Now you think, what would this have to do with communication? But effectively, when we do the things that make us happy, we are more effective at communicating and we generally communicate in a more positive way. The exercise is to take a piece of paper and literally draw every single thing that gives you a positive vibe, but it doesn't stop there. The next part of the exercise is when you're feeling miserable, look back at that happy list and do what a friend of mine calls joy stacking. Joy stacking is when you try to do as many of those activities or experience those things or consume those things that make you joyful in as short a period of time. And I can guarantee you it 100% worked. I went from a day where I was at a 30% level of energy to a 60% level of energy within 3 hours, simply by doing joy stacking with every single thing that was on my list. So if you've ever thought about the things that give you joy, or even if you haven't, do yourself a favor, go and draw. And it has to be drawing because it accesses a different part of your brain. Draw the things that give you joy, put that away and come back to that again later when you really need a joy boost.
Wow, that's awesome. What were some of the like joy stacking things that you had personally listed out, Gina?
Thank you for asking. For me, joy includes drinking cups of tea, eating good food that makes me feel healthy and nourished, listening to music that boosts my mood, getting sunshine, or if I can't be in a place where I get sunshine, just putting bright lights on or lights that are a happy color, sleep, getting enough sleep, actually, and then just feeling warm and cozy and comfortable in something that makes me feel joyful. So at that period of time, I managed to do all of that. Oh, and a hot bath. So I had a hot bath, a hot drink, a good meal, a good sleep, and listened to some very calming music. And then I think I read something that was inspiring to me as well. And I managed to cram all of that into a really short period of time. What I've also found is that when we are in positions where we are miserable, the things that we would naturally do to bring ourselves joy, we deliberately don't do. It's kind of ironic. I feel miserable, therefore I'm going to do less of the things that give me joy, and therefore I become more miserable, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
But when you actually stop and break that routine, and if you do joy stacking, for example, you can notice that that downward trend can be shifted until you start actually accessing more of your happy state simply by doing the things that you probably hadn't been doing.
I think that you and I have very similar joy stacking activities. I mean, I always have a tea in hand. I think music really helps. Walking, like going outside,
yes,
helps a lot, especially when you receive that morning sun. Mm. No matter how you feel, I think the moment we get out and start moving, like that can immediately do a shift.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes even like certain movements and certain stretches can be a very good, like immediate type, you know, like it can be something that we can do immediately. You know, if it's getting to 3 p.m. in the afternoon and you're really feeling down or miserable, they are some things that we can immediately do to help. And also for me, a really good cup of coffee and like grabbing, like smelling that fresh brew, you know, it brings all sorts of joy for me. So, yeah.
There is another important element of changing your mind that I don't think I've given the credence that it deserves. If you change your breath, you can immediately change your physiological response. You can disrupt stress hormones. And you can bring your body into a state where it no longer is in that sense of flight or fight. A friend of mine discovered recently that she was enjoying breathing through the Calm app. Other apps are available, of course, but she found this one helpful for her. She didn't like the box breathing. She didn't like being told to breathe four in, four hold, four out, four hold. Didn't work for her. But she found that if she just paid more attention to her breath and started to consciously elongate the amount of time that she took to breathe in and out, her physiology shifted. And the reason that this is interesting is because I think we don't realize how much happens to our body when we're in a state of stress. When I coach people who are stressed, I can observe that their behavior is, it's kind of all up in their head. Look, your shoulders are risen, your chin is tucked in, your body is kind of like, it's like you're trying to protect yourself. And over time, as we build trust, but more importantly, as people build trust in themselves, what happens is their shoulders drop, they go back, their chin lifts up. And what happens is that all of your breathing apparatus, which is designed to work brilliantly when your body is actually in alignment and not stressed, effectively works better. If you're talking like this, of course, you're going to sound like you're struggling to talk. But if you're talking like this, you can reach deeper into your breath. You can be more eloquent and articulate to yourself more clearly. And I think a lot of that has to do with actually changing our breathing patterns so that we're not talking like this all the time.
Totally agree. Totally agree. I love that, Gina. And may I add, you know, a brisk walk also always helps. So that's my little, yeah, that's my two cents for today. Gina, I just want to say thank you so much for all that you have contributed. You have so much knowledge and wisdom, and I am so, so looking forward to sharing this episode with our listeners and, you know, with all the people that tune in regularly to the show. I would also, before we wrap this up, I'd actually really love to ask you, I've got five rapid fire questions. And
go for it.
I would love to find out. Yeah, I think the listeners as well would absolutely love to find out a little bit more about you. So shall we get started?
I'm ready.
All right, rapid fire question number one. If there was one thing you cannot live a single day without, whether it's something physical or non-physical, what would it be?
Two things, cups of tea and cuddles with my husband.
Oh, beautiful. I love that. What or who inspired you to do what you do today?
Oh, that's a tricky question that can't be answered in a rapid fire way because I took a long time to find anyone who did inspire me. I don't think there are enough women who are in positions of leadership and authority to inspire others. But if I were to be inspired by someone today, it would be Nelson Mandela, who was, of course, the first democratic president of the country that I was born in, South Africa. And then also Jacinda Ardern, because I think she was an extraordinary president, prime minister, at a time when the world was going through incredible change and turmoil, and she did a really good job.
Wow. Thank you for sharing. That's beautiful. In terms of rapid fire question number three, where do you see yourself in 5 years? So in terms of in 5 years' time, what do you want to have accomplished or what do you want to have achieved or where do you want to be?
I see myself as the voice behind the voice. In 5 years' time, I want to have a stable of CEOs who are so comfortable with the way that they speak that they're making ripples in the universe. And that I am an extended part of their network, but also I am helping other people like them to make a bigger difference in the world. That's where I see myself, not as the person who stands up on stage and delivers, and I would like to do that too, but as the person who knows that I'm inspiring others to make that change.
Wow. Gina, you are so clear on your five-year goal. That is very, very impressive. Thank you so much. What is one big takeaway that you've had recently that has changed the way you see the world?
Exercise improves your brain. I kind of always knew this, but I recently listened to a podcast that talked about the physiological impact of exercise on short-term memory and also creativity. And it was a neuroscience who talked about the brain. In fact, you can check out the episode. It was on the Diary of a CEO, and he literally touched a squishy brain. He called it like our ball of tofu. And that really brought it home to me that it's enough to, you do exercise because you have to, but actually do exercise so that you can get a big, fat, fluffy brain. Because if we love our brain, it serves us much better, much longer into the future.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Gina, one last rapid fire question before we wrap this up. If you could leave the world with one message today, what would it be?
Be kind. Be kind to other people around you, but more importantly, be kind to yourself. You deserve it more than you think you do. And there is nothing to be gained by beating yourself up. I think if we were all 50% kinder to ourselves, a lot of violence, antagonism, and hatred would be reduced.
So good. I agree. Gina, thank you again. You have inspired us so much in this episode. There's so, so, so much for us to take away. And for anyone that wants to connect with Gina, Gina Balaran is on LinkedIn, and I will link her website and everything in the show notes.
Please do reach out. So often people think that they have to do this on their own. If you just want to say hello and you enjoyed the episode, please do. But if not, reach out to someone who's close to you, because we don't have to do this on our own. No matter how much we think we don't deserve to be with other people, there is always someone else who's had a similar experience to you. You don't have to be alone.
So well said. Thank you, Gina. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Phoebe. Have a fabulous day.
So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive.